Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, the music industry finally sues Twitter. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there. I'm not going to try to replicate your silly way of saying hello. I resist.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when Ed Sheeran introduced his hot sauce loving alter ego Ted in a new advertising campaign.
Yes, you may remember. It's possible. This may be the sort of thing that you store in your memory, that earlier this year, Ed Sheeran, who has for quite some time now been known as a ketchup fan, because he had his own labels, didn't he, for Heinz Tomato Ketchup, which I think was called Heinz Tomato Edchup or something like that. Am I remembering that bit right? That wasn't this year. That was way back. And then earlier this year, he launched his own hot sauce brand, suggesting that his use of tedious Heinz ketchup was over, although it does turn out that Heinz are involved in this as well. So he introduced his own hot sauce brand that you can smother all over your food. It's called Tingly Ted's. We knew that because it came out earlier this year, but last week, the first of three TV ad... Well, I say TV ad. Is it going out on TV or is it just going on YouTube? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
The first of three TV-esque adverts was put out online. His record label, Warner Music, are involved in this through their brand partnerships division, WMX. Although, as we say, the product is actually made by Heinz. And in order to push this hot sauce product, they've come up with this character of a grumpy teddy bear, basically, which they're calling Ted. I think if Seth MacFarlane is watching any of this, he might think that he's been a bit ripped off. But that was what was happened last week. I actually quite liked the ad when I actually went to watch it. It's the teddy bear character doesn't speak. He's just quite grumpy and very greedy when it comes to keeping the sauce for himself, is the general narrative of the ad.
I didn't think it was that great. I thought it was an idea that they probably would have fleshed out a bit more had Ed Sheeran not been involved, and they just thought, oh, well, doesn't have to be good because Ed Sheeran's in it. I sent it to someone and they immediately said, it's not exactly Paddington and the Queen, is it? But that's quite a high benchmark to go for.
People did seem to like that little clip they did last year. Was it last year with Paddington and the Queen? No, I'm not sure.
I can now see the pitch for this being, it's like that terrible film Ted and that Paddington and the Queen thing, but with hot sauce.
And Ed Sheeran.
Ted was a terrible film. We just talk about that for the rest of the podcast.
It was, wasn't it? And
it's just an awful film.
I only watched it relatively recently because clips kept popping up in my, I assume, YouTube Shorts feed. And the clips are quite funny. And I was like, oh, I never watched that film. I think it's on Amazon Prime. Maybe I'll watch it. And then after about 20 minutes of watching the actual film, it was like, yeah, there's clearly 7 30-second good bits of this film, which I've already seen on YouTube, and the rest is rubbish. Yes, to be fair to Ed Sheeran and his Tingly Ted's advert, it is reassuringly short.
Better than Ted, not as good as Paddington.
For the one gag that it contains. But more fun, much more fun than the actual clip, the actual ad, is the job title of the person from Heinz who was quoted on the press release we were sent when this advert went live.
Yeah, also their quote, which, I mean, was also, I mean, all of the quotes in the press release for this were mainly just words put in some sort of order that didn't necessarily make sense. But yeah, so Andre Fernandez, who is Vice President of Taste Elevation for the International Zone at the Kraft Heinz Company.
Apparently,
that is a job title.
Before you get to VP Taste Elevation, International Zone, what other zones are there?
Well, I presume America is the non-international zone and the rest of the world is now the international zone.
Are they promoting Ed Sheeran's tingly sauce on Mars, but they've got a different team working on that.
Yeah, maybe. Also, I mean, what does a VP of taste elevation do? I don't believe anyone could tell me what that job is, even Andre Fernandez.
When Ed Sheeran first launched this sauce earlier this year and also put out some nonsense quotes alongside that, he very much implied that he'd had hands-on involvement in the taste of these sauces.
Yeah.
So why does he need a VP taste elevation at all? Surely Ed was on top of it.
Well, maybe the taste he came up with wasn't very good and it needed to be elevated.
Maybe that's the role Heinz has played within the international zone on this product.
Yeah. Anyway, do you want to know what Andre Fernandez said?
Go on.
He said, "When we first introduced Tingly Ted's earlier this year, we were excited for the world to meet the brand and try the ketchup of hot sauces. Now we can't wait for people to get to know Ted and experience life as he sees it, covered in the perfect amount of Tingly Ted's."
And without wanting to ruin the punchline of the ad, the perfect amount of Tingly Ted's is the entire bottle. That's the entire sort of plot of the ad.
That's the gag. Oh, but, I mean, all of life has to be covered in hot sauce.
Well, let's hope they've got a lot of bottles of it then. But that was a development this last week in the music business. But I think you'll all be very, very, very pleased to hear that this is not what we're here to talk about this week.
I think we have now talked about it for most of the show.
Maybe Andy Malt will put a link to the ad in the show notes so you can go and watch it Maybe. Yourself. And in doing so, that will render everything we've just talked about utterly pointless. But whatever, it's...
Hey, we talked about Ted.
We did.
The terrible film Ted.
We did diss the film. I think there was a sequel, wasn't there? Two? Was there two of them? Did they make a sequel?
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
Anyway.
I don't know why there was a sequel.
None of this is what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on we'll be discussing the new Record Industry Alliance aiming to eradicate streaming fraud. But first, Twitter is being sued by a consortium of music publishers for hosting what they say are countless videos that contain unlicensed music. In a new legal filing, they say this is a civil action seeking damages and injunctive relief for Twitter's willful copyright infringement. Twitter fuels its business with countless infringing copies of musical compositions, violating publishers and others' exclusive rights under copyright law. While numerous Twitter competitors recognise the need for proper licences and agreements for the use of musical compositions on their platforms, it goes on, Twitter does not, and instead breeds massive copyright infringement that harms music creators.
So I think it's fair to say that this lawsuit has been quite a long time coming. I mean, as they alluded to in that sentence you just read out there, that, okay, we know there's lots of people in the music industry who are not particularly happy with how much money services like TikTok and Instagram pay into the music industry. Everybody seems to think that we should be getting more money from TikTok, we should be getting more money from Instagram. But hey, at least we're getting some money because those are social media / user-generated content platforms that have bothered to get licensing deals from the music industry, whereas Twitter is, of the big social media platforms, the one that is still a holdout in terms of negotiating any deals with the music industry, covering the music that appear in the videos that people upload to that platform. There was a time, I want to say about 18 months ago, where Twitch and Twitter were sort of competing for who was enemy number one of the big digital platforms where music was used without license. But Twitch, although in some cases is still resisting, is talking to the labels and has got some deals in place. So I think it is fair to say when it comes to the big digital platforms, Twitter is the enemy. So we have been expecting somebody in the music industry, most likely in the US, to go legal on this for some time. And yes, as you say, the National Music Publishers Association in the US has rallied a bunch of publishers together, including all of the majors, so the Universal, Sony and Warner music publishing companies, to get a lawsuit filed with some tough talking about just how egregious Twitter's infringing of the rights of the music industry, of songwriters and music publishers, is.
Yeah, so let's get on with some more of that tough talking. The lawsuit continues, "The pervasive infringing activity at issue in this case is no accident. While the Twitter platform began as a destination for short, text-based messages, Twitter widened its business model to compete more aggressively with other social media sites for users, advertisers, and subscribers. By design," it adds, "the Twitter platform became a hot destination for multimedia content, with music-infused videos being of particular and paramount importance. Videos draw much higher rates of engagement than posts that merely include text, images, or animated GIFs." It continues, "Audiovisual tweets, and especially ones containing publishers' copyrighted works, attract and retain users to the Twitter platform, drive ad impressions, and advance Twitter's key metrics and economic interests."
It is certainly true, of course, that Twitter, like most platforms that started out with text-based communications and then moved into sort of more visual communications, these days your Twitter feed has an awful lot of video in there and people are watching videos on there. And slowly but surely, you're starting to see some creators who create video content using Twitter as a like a primary platform for that content, rather than perhaps what they would have done in the past, which is put their content on, say, YouTube and then put some snippets on Twitter. So it is definitely true that, like all the social media platforms, video has become a key part of the proposition. Lots of those videos do contain music. So as we say, it's not surprising at all, given Twitter's seeming continued resistance to the idea of getting some licenses for that music, that this lawsuit has come in. The lawsuit does also preempt a couple of the excuses that Twitter, and of course these days that probably means Elon Musk at some point having a little moan and rant about this on Twitter, presumably, but a couple of the excuses that they're likely to come to the table with are both preempted in the lawsuit. The first of those is Twitter potentially coming to the table and saying, "Oh, but music licensing, sorting out music rights, it's so complicated. We don't know what songs, we don't know what recordings. You don't really have licenses for services like Twitter because we're not Spotify." And if that was the excuse that Elon Musk and whoever it is who still works at Twitter, since he fired everybody, if that's the excuse they're bringing to the table, the publishers are ready with a response.
Yeah, they say, "There is a vibrant existing market for social media companies to pay fees for the use of musical compositions. Social media companies behind such well-known platforms as TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Snapchat have entered into agreements with publishers and other rights holders that compensate creators of musical compositions for use of their works on those platforms."
So the licenses are just out there to be sought and bought and paid for. The publishers would like Twitter, or more importantly, the court, if this ever gets to a full court hearing, to know. So I said that there could be at least two excuses that Twitter bring to the table. The other would be the pesky safe harbor, where Twitter would say, "We're just a platform, we're a mere conduit, we don't have any control over the content that people upload, it's not our problem, we have safe harbor protection under copyright law, you can't sue us." I don't know whether they would push that argument. It feels very 2016, doesn't it, that kind of argument? But preempting that, obviously, to rely on the copyright safe harbor under copyright law, particularly in the US, you have to respond when copyright owners point out copyright infringing content on your platform to you. And while back in the day, it used to be a little bit ambiguous as to what that meant, in more recent years, those obligations have been a little bit more defined for a series of court cases. And so I think the music publishers would say, and indeed they do say in their lawsuit, you can't claim safe harbor because we've been telling you about infringing content again and again and again, and you're just not doing enough to deal with all of that infringing music on your platform.
Yeah, here's another quote. The lawsuit says, "Publishers have spent significant time and resources to identify specific infringers and specific infringements and to notify Twitter of them. Those specific infringers and specific infringements already number in the hundreds of thousands. Twitter has repeatedly failed to take the most basic step of expeditiously removing or disabling access to the infringing material identified by the infringement notices. Twitter has continued to assist known repeat infringers with their infringement," it adds. "Those repeat offenders do not face a realistic threat of Twitter terminating their accounts, and thus the cycle of infringement continues across the Twitter platform."
Now, as we say, Twitter has been high up the digital platform enemy list, gripe list, whatever you want to call it, of the music industry for quite some time now. If anybody was thinking that when Elon Musk took over last year, he was going to fix all of this, I mean, I'm not sure that person exists. But let's pretend that there was one person somewhere who thought, when Elon Musk takes over Twitter, he's going to sort out the music licensing. Well, no. The lawsuit confirms both before and after that high-profile sale of the company, Twitter has engaged in, knowingly facilitated and profited from, I think Elon Musk has been pretty clear that Twitter doesn't really profit from anything. That's part of the problem. But that's not the point. That is not the point. Let's not allow that to be the point. Because it has engaged in and knowingly facilitated copyright infringement at the expense of music creators to whom Twitter pays nothing.
So there's a lot of tough talk there, but what do the publishers actually want? Well, they want the courts to confirm that Twitter is infringing their copyrights in the way that the publishers say that Twitter is, and they seem pretty sure that that's the case. But yeah, they want court confirmation of that. Then they want an injunction ordering Twitter to stop infringing the bloody copyrights, and the other thing that everyone always wants, a whole load of damages, which in this case could be quite a lot and makes for a lovely headline-grabbing amount.
Yes, because as regular listeners to Setlist may remember, under US copyright law, there's a thing called statutory damages. So rather than having to prove in court how much you have lost as a result of the infringement or how much the infringer has gained, you can simply say, I want 150 grand per infringed work. That's providing you can prove that the copyright infringement was willful, is the key word. If you want to rewind back to the earlier on in this podcast, you'll notice that in one of the early quotes from the lawsuit, they used the word willful. So if they can convince the court that it's willful copyright infringement, they can ask for 150 grand per infringed work. But how many infringed works have there been? Well, accompanying the lawsuit, the publishers provided another document that identifies somewhere around about 1,700 works. So shall I read out the list? Do you want them all?
Yeah.
American Pie is in there. Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 is in there. Anti-Hero is in there. As It Was is in there. Those are the A's. Those aren't all the A's. There's more than that.
Dark Knight Demo.
And Bad Habit. Is that Ed Sheeran's song there? Yeah, that'll be probably Ed Sheeran's song. Has he got a song called Bad Habit, or am I making that up?
Bad Habits, yeah.
Because of You. Hey, two songs called Because of You. Two different songs called Because of You, both infringed, allegedly, by Twitter. We're still in the bead. Hey, Bittersweet Symphony. Oh, look at that. Ha, that's interesting. Bittersweet Symphony with the Rolling Stones publisher. Down as the publisher of that. So that's another story, isn't it? What else have we got in here? We've got
Feliz Navidad.
It's an outrage, isn't it? Imagine that. Imagine infringing that. Songs called Work, three of them. So there's Work and then there's Work, and they are also infringing the song called Work. Two songs called Wolves. Yeah, it's about time we stop having song names and we just use the numbers. I think there are too many songs.
Well, I've also got, we've got Give It All, Give It To Me and Give Me Everything and also Give Me Love and then Given Up.
So I think it's fair to say a lot of songs have been allegedly infringed by Twitter. And if you were to take each of those and you were to multiply it by the 150 grand per work, basically you end up with total damages in excess of $250 million, although that would have to be shared out between all of the publishers who are involved in this. So maybe not the biggest payday from a lawsuit of this kind, unless they're able to bring along another 10,000 works that are probably on there somewhere. I mean, they said at the start that there were countless number of videos. That makes it quite hard to count how much damages they should get, doesn't it? Maybe they shouldn't be saying it.
Well, they also mentioned hundreds of thousands. I mean, unless it's these 1,700 songs being infringed over and over again and nothing else. There are quite a lot. No one ever lists the whole. They always pick a handful, don't they?
They do.
1,700 is quite a lot.
It is. So we are awaiting, as we record this podcast, for Twitter to respond. I mean, we wouldn't expect Twitter to respond, certainly not in formal way this quickly. Presumably some sort of defense document will be submitted to court down the line. Whether we'll get any formal statement from Twitter, I mean, I think Elon Musk, didn't he sack their entire PR team? So when people were trying to report on him firing everybody, they couldn't get an official statement because he'd fired everybody who did PR for Twitter. But presumably at some point Elon Musk will get on the tweets and have a moan about this. So we look forward to seeing that. But yeah, this has been a long time coming. So we'll be interesting to see whether or not any sort of settlement or licensing deal can be negotiated with this stick ready to beat Twitter with, or whether or not Elon Musk will let it go to court. And if he does, I mean, he almost certainly won't. Although, you know, even though it is the set list cliche, this will never get to court. Maybe if there's one person who would let it go to court, it would be Elon Musk. I don't know. It would be fascinating if it did. But anyway, well done, music industry, for finally getting round to suing Twitter.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, now, we just talked about a coalition of music publishers. Let's keep the theme running and talk about a coalition or an alliance of music distributors who have come together with Spotify and Amazon Music to form Music Fights Fraud, a new initiative which they describe as a global task force aimed at eradicating streaming fraud.
As we said, this is another about time story. I don't quite know how it's taken the industry this long to get round to getting this together. Of course, it is no secret at all. Nobody, not one person on the planet, is not aware of this. Okay, maybe lots of people are not aware of this. No Setlist listeners will be unaware of the fact that on the streaming services, on Spotify and all the other music streaming services, a bunch of scams are going on right now, in which scammers and fraudsters and just generally dodgy people are doing certain things to allow them to pull money out of the royalty pool each month, money that should be going to artists and songwriters and labels and publishers in the music industry. Because remember, streaming is ultimately a revenue share business. The streaming services like Spotify commit to share their revenues every month. So for example, the money they make selling subscriptions and the money they make selling advertising, they share that money with the music industry, and part of that is allocating money to individual tracks that are streamed in any one month. And various people scam that system. Some people basically upload music which is misleadingly labeled or which is just outright copyright infringing, and they hope that it doesn't get spotted by any audio ID systems that may be in place. So then people, legit subscribers, listen to that music, not realizing that they're listening to music that was uploaded by scammers, which means that any money due to that music then gets paid over to those people. But of course, there's also the other scam that has been talked about a lot over the years, which is where basically people create their own music, pretty generic music that no one would ever actually want to listen to, but then they buy a load of Spotify subscriptions or Apple Music subscriptions or whatever, and they set a load of computers listening to that music, and usually they will be listening to that music sort of almost 24/7, but I mean, obviously over the years, people have got a little bit more sophisticated. So they'll probably listen to that music in amongst other music, so it doesn't look quite so suspicious. But crucially, because of the way streaming works, because of the current business model, those people can get more out in royalties from the streams of their music than they pay in by buying the subscriptions. So there are these various scams that have been happening on the streaming services. They've been happening for years. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that there have been various moments over the years where trade organizations and other groups within the music industry have raised these scams and this fraud and said, we must do something about this. And particularly in Germany, the indies and the managers have been very vocal about this for a number of years now. But it has to be said that certainly here in the UK, for many years, we knew this was going on, but it didn't actually get brought up all that often. People just seem to be like, oh yeah, streaming fraud's annoying, isn't it? But it does feel in the last year it really has started to come up the agenda for the industry at large. The major record companies are talking about this much more than they used to. And I think that's partly because the scale of the fraud is increasing, which means an ever-increasing amount of money is coming out of the system. Obviously, the digital pie continues to grow every month. So even if it's the same percentage, it's more money every month. And I think with various companies developing technologies to try and spot the fraud, it's becoming a little bit more obvious that this fraud is happening, which is why I think people are finally trying to sort this out.
Now, some people have argued that simply changing the business model to a user-centric system would stop at least some of this fraud, particularly the one where people are listening to their own music, because under a user-centric system, they'd put in their subscription money and then they'd only get back the money they put in minus the streaming services cut, which would mean they were losing money and therefore that fraud would not be worth doing.
Yeah, and supporters of the user-centric approach often stress that potential benefit of moving over from the current system of sharing out the money to the so-called user-centric system. There are pros and cons to user-centric. I mean, obviously, it was originally presented by its supporters as just being a fairer way to distribute the money and a way that would potentially mean the superstars would make slightly less, but sort of mid-level artists would make more, and that would be a better, more equitable way of sharing out the money. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not true. There have been various studies about that. But, I mean, I have to say, personally, when it comes to user-centric, I'm not sure it would be as dramatic as some people have suggested in the past in terms of making sure that sort of mid-level artists get more money. Actually, I think some mid-level artists, some independent labels would make less money under a user-centric system. Although it has to be said, I definitely do agree that one of the big benefits of user-centric is it would kill not all of the fraud. Some of the scams would not be affected, and obviously scammers would come up with new scams. But it would stop one of the big kinds of streaming fraud if we went over to a user-centric model. Although we know that the major record companies in the main, well, I think officially they're still agnostic on user-centric. The official line still is, oh, we need to see more research. But it seems pretty certain that the majors, and particularly Universal Music, even though they are being much more vocal about the need to deal with streaming fraud and the scams in the last year or so, are not fans of user-centric. Indeed, Universal Music, who, of course, since the start of the year have been saying that there are various reasons why it's time to change the way money gets shared out from the streaming services each month. And Universal keep talking about this artist-centric model that they would like to see implemented, even though we don't know what that means. And as far as I'm aware, they haven't actually consulted any artists about what this artist-centric model might look like. But we do know that Universal have been working with both Tidal and Deezer on investigating possible new ways of distributing the money. And then in the last 10 days, reports they're also collaborating with SoundCloud on this. And the reason why that is interesting is Deezer, Tidal, SoundCloud, to date, have been the three digital companies that have been vocal in their support of shifting to a user-centric model for various reasons. We know that now Tidal and Deezer are working with Universal on a possible new way of sharing the money. User-centric is not being considered as part of that work. We don't quite know about SoundCloud, but it does seem interesting that Universal seems to be partnering with the companies who are pro-user-centric, and then in doing so, they become less pro-user-centric. So maybe that's the agenda with SoundCloud as well. I don't know. But the point is, it doesn't feel like we're going to be shifting to a user-centric system anytime soon, despite the benefits user-centric would deliver in terms of fighting fraud, which means we need to find other ways to stop the scammers. And that is what this new initiative is part of.
Yes, it's generally agreed that one of the problems is the lack of coordinated action between the streaming services and music distributors, because each company has its own system in place to spot and stop scammers, but because there isn't communication across the industry, that allows fraudsters to just keep jumping from one distributor to another as their activities are spotted. But Music Fights Fraud is seemingly seeking to address that very weakness. The companies involved in the initiative say that the scheme represents the first time all corners of the music industry have aligned as a united front to combat fraud in music streaming. The initiative, it goes on, will focus on streaming fraud and streaming manipulation across digital streaming services and will work to ensure that the global music streaming market is fair and that all members actively contribute to solutions intended to balance the equity of its operations. The objectives of Music Fights Fraud, if you are wondering, are to detect, prevent and mitigate fraud and to enforce anti-fraud measures, thereby moving closer to an industry where fraud has no place. I mean, good luck with that, but less fraud is good.
It certainly is. I think this is a good initiative. I'm not accepting Andy Malt's cynicism on this. And I'm going to say well done to the distributors who are coming together to communicate and coordinate on this. Who are those distributors, you may be wondering? Well, I can tell you. CD Baby and its owner Downtown are part of this. TuneCore and its owner Believe are part of this. DistroKid, United Masters, Symphonic and Empire are all involved from the off, and I would suspect we will see some of the other, particularly DIY distributors, coming on board as well. They're also working with an American organization called the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance. That's a bold name, isn't it? Which is an organization which, and I quote, this is on their website, aims to provide a neutral, trusted environment enabling multi-party collaboration to identify, mitigate, and disrupt cybercrime. I imagine they are involved because one of the reasons why this hasn't happened before is the music distribution market is incredibly competitive. And whereas record labels, I mean, although obviously labels compete very much so, but for many years now, labels have tended to collaborate, particularly on things like copyright issues, because if they're campaigning to get copyright law reform, they need to come together. And although some distributors have participated in record label trade bodies like the BPI and AIM here in the UK, I think because the distributors are super, super competitive, they don't tend to share information in the same way that maybe other people in the music industry do. So I imagine by working this organization, it will allow all of these companies to be sharing the information they need to share, to have industry consensus and collaboration on fighting the fraud. But I imagine this will stop sort of, you know, confidential competitive information going from one distributor to another. I'm assuming, that's guessing on my part, but interesting to see that organization also involved.
This scheme has also been welcomed by a number of music industry trade organizations. So in the US, Mitch Glazier of the RIAA says, music creators, distributors and services all have a shared stake in a healthy, reliable streaming economy that values human artistry, protects creators' rights and supports authentic streams. RIAA supports new innovations in the fight against all forms of stream manipulation, fraud and piracy and welcomes the efforts of Music Fights Fraud.
Meanwhile, in the UK, Sylvia Montello from the Association of Independent Music, who was a guest on a recent edition of Setlist that we recorded at Wide Days, she responded to this by saying, streaming fraud in all its guises is recognised as one of the biggest and growing issues facing the recordings business. AIM welcomes all initiatives from distributors, platforms and labels to help tackle it effectively. The Music Fights Fraud Alliance, which seeks to identify fraudsters, prevent distributor hopping tactics and enable fraud investigation for criminals operating at scale, can only be a step in the right direction. AIM encourages this and other initiatives using technology to assist in the gatekeeping of content uploads so that genuine artists and creators receive the royalties due to them. So interesting development of this week in the battle against streaming fraud. Will be interesting to see whether or not it has any successes and we can beat some of those scammers.
Yes, and maybe we could go and do that now, because that's all the time we've got on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here or watch that Ed Sheeran advert, go to the show notes, which you'll find in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't done that, and also rate and review the show. That's a good thing to do.
Because we're not going to be here next week, remember, because somebody is going to the Glastonbury Bloody Festival. So
somebody is, yes.
You need to be subscribed so that the next edition just pops in your feed when it is published, whenever that might be.
Well, presuming I survive Glastonbury, it'll be in 2 weeks' time.
Let's go with that presumption.
But we'll see. I may still be just too tired by Thursday. I'm quite old now. I haven't been for a long time. Anyway, email us. Email us your reviews of the film Ted at setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.